majority of three-quarters of the book is unrelated, is left, is after small.
So when is this supposedly written?
So again, so this is written in parts. Now we have that, and we've had that in our earlier books as well. Yehoshua wrote Yehoshua, but Yehoshua died in Yehoshua.
Right.
So then we said, so then Pinchas picked it up. And not Pinchas, I mean Elazar picked it up. But then Elazar died.
Right.
Right? So again, the idea being that the fact that a book of the Navi is written in pieces, that's nothing new to us.
So who puts it together? Who puts these pieces together?
Whoever writes the end.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Right? That's the only person who can do it.
And so when is the book of Shmuel finished? And
so again, the book of Shmuel is probably finished around the time of the death of David, which is the beginning of the book of Malachim.
Okay.
Now, the canonization...
Well, Nathan HaNavi is the one that's there when David HaMelech dies.
Correct.
So he's been there all along.
Right. I mean, that he's there, that gives him the ability to. These books were written at that time. They weren't necessarily recognized as part of Tanakh at that time.
Okay.
Right? The concept of the 24 books of Tanakh obviously didn't come until much later on. That was in the time of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. And at that time, there was a fair amount of discussion of what book made it in and what book didn't make it in.
Right.
And a few of them made it in, just kind of slipped in. There were a few of them that had a hard time getting in there, and the other ones who just never made it. So
again, date-wise, what are we talking about? Shmuel ending around when?
So
we're never good with dates here.
Well, this is how we always start. We're very Zionistic. We always start in 1948.
Okay.
1948 was when Avram was born.
Right.
Right, which means in 2048, Yitzhak was born.
Okay.
Right, because 100 years old.
Yep.
Which means in 2448, they left Egypt.
Right.
Which means in 2488, they crossed over the Jordan.
Okay.
Right? And if you remember, we said, Yiftach said it was 300 years later that he was. And then it was good. Then we have to assume that it's around another, probably around another 70 years after that. So probably, if I had to pick a year, I'd say we're just shy of the year 3000.
Okay.
I'd say the 2829s. That's where we're up to.
I'll go for 3,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
So those are the years we're talking about here. Now the years are going to get a lot simpler to follow, because unlike Shmuel, where we learned of a whole slew of different leaders, right? The book of Shmuel only has really two. Right? There's right now, there's Shaul and there's Ishbosheth also,
yeah.
Right? But you know, there's overlap there also, you know. So that's why in terms. So we're talking that even though this is a much longer book, right? Say for Shoftim was 21 prakim, and Shmuel Aleph is 32, and Shmuel Beis is 26, I think. So we're talking about 50. It's almost three times the size of it in terms of years, right? We're only talking about under 100 years, right? Because Shmuel...
For the whole of Shmuel?
The whole of Shmuel. The whole of Shmuel. Because you just do the math, right? Shmuel only lived to be 52. And David was the king for 40 years.
That's true.
Right? So you put it together, you don't get 100 even.
Right.
So that's what we're looking at here. Okay. The Gemara number 4, this is where I wanted to really start with, the rest was just a little background, talks about Vayhi Ish Echad Min Ramatayim Tzofim. Who is this guy? Right? Echad Min Ramatayim Tzofim Shinesav Lehem Yisrael. So he says that in fact Elkanah, the father of Shmuel, was a Navi. He was a Tzofeh. Tzofeh is a seer. Tzofeh Umabit, as we said recently. Right, harbe neviim amdalem Yisrael kifraim kiyotzim. There were many, many neviim. We don't know about all of them. So that's who he is. In fact, then it says, wait a second, third line. Rav Chanan Omer Adam haba mi bnei Adam sheomdim berumo shalom ma'nihu bnei Korach. It says here that in fact he is a descendant of
Korach.
Now let's figure this out.
Yeah.
Korach is from which Shevet?
Levi.
Levi. Right?
Yeah.
So again, so we said the guy was from Har Ephraim. That was one possibility. Ephrati, right? Ephrat, we said, is Yehuda.
Right.
Now we're saying he's a descendant of Korach. So we already have around a quarter of the Shvat we've just listed off there. So what is the story
also
here with
changes the status?
What?
Also changes the status.
Very right. So the Radak says, Radak puts it all together on our first pasuk, and he says, "How from Levi Haya? He was a Levi. Bahaya gar be'eretz Ephraim. He was called an Ephrati because he lived in Ephraim. Where did the Levium live?
All over.
Right. There are 42 cities of the Levium plus 6 Ari Miklat that they lived in. Total of 48. We went through this in Yoshua. 48 of over 12 tribes. As each tribe gave 4 cities, an exact number." So therefore, that's the reason why. So even if someone's living,
who lived among others.
The short answer is yes. Shimon, remember, lived inside of Yehuda,
right?
But in terms of spread out, obviously, no one else was like this. So,
other things about being a seer or a navi. How do we know this?
The Gemara number 4 is a primary source.
Okay, do we know what he prophesied about?
So it says in the Gemara that there were many prophets. Only prophecies that are useful for later generations were written down. Prophecies that were only relevant for that generation were not written down. So therefore, since it's not relevant to us, no, we don't know what it is. So it says, Mehar Ephraim, right? Levi Hayav Hayav Garber Ephraim. Right? He said, in fact, that he was from Har Ephraim. In fact, he says, why is this relevant? Well, what did we just learn about last week? We ended Shoftim. What was the last story in Shoftim?
Pilegesh
Begiva. Right? So he said, V'chira tamzeh nismach maise Pilegesh Begiva l'sipur hazeh b'davash elkana v'toldo shmuel shigam hu levi haya. Remember, the fellow was a Levi in the last story as well. And he was a Levi who happened to live in Ephraim. And he said, and that's what led to all this. That's why, that's what we ended with there, and this is what we're beginning with here. There's a connection between the two of them.
Does that mean we think they're related to each other? I mean,
no, not necessarily, okay. But again, there's a connection between the stories. Okay. Now, Pasuk Beis, V'rosh Tei Nashim, Shem Achas Chana, V'shem Ashinis Pnina, V'hira Pnina Yiradim, V'chana En Liyadim. Two wives, one's name was Chana, one name was Pnina. Very, very interesting. I am a very big fan of Chana. My daughter Chana was named after?
Chana.
Chana, right? Right? Once you have enough daughters, once all the dead grandmothers are covered, you get a few free passes, you know. So Chana was our first choice, right? There was no great person in Tanakh named Jenny that we decided to name her after. Should have been maybe, but not yet.
Coming up.
The name Chana is very telling. A Mishnah that we read every Friday night, it says, Al Shlosha Everos Nashim Mesos Beshas Le'dasan. There are 3 sins that cause women to die during childbirth, and they are Shenizirus Benida, Chala, Vahadrakas Haner. Right? The 3 very female mitzvahs. Chala, Nida, Hadlaka is Rashi Tevis. Chana.
Wow.
Right?
Wait. I'm sorry. Everybody knows, Chala, but I don't know what you're talking about. Okay.
Nida.
Sorry. Now I got it. Just have to slow down.
Right? Right? So Chana, in many ways, is seen as the prototypical religious woman. She is Rashi Tevis of Chala, Nida, Habrakas, Haner. Very interesting. Beyond that, if you take a look at the Gemara in Brachas, right? In fact, Chana, when she prays to God, so it says, Amra Chana lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Shlosha bitke misa b'rav isha. There are 3 things that cause a woman to die. Brahmi Shlosha dafke misa, Ve'elim Chala, Nida, Nida Chala v'Hadlakas Haner. Kula mavarti alachas mechem. Her argument is, I never was found wanting in any of these. I was very scrupulous in keeping these mitzvahs. Right? And hence the name Chana. Very interesting. Again, according, we get a little Kabbalistic here, but according to the Kabbalistic thought, Chana is actually a Gilgal, a reincarnation of Sarah. Sarah Imenu. Number 8 says, Hine Sarah v'chana v'shunamis tzarfati kulam heim Gilgal Chava. What's the reason? And Sarah Imenu titna kol gimel mitzvahs. And Sarah started 3 mitzvahs. And what were they? Guess what? Chala v'nida v'abraka saner. K'mosh kosta v'azal. Bracha mitzuya b'isasa. Chala, because remember they said that that when she baked, there was a special bracha in her challah, and there was a ner dolg me'er Shabbos. It says that when Yitzchak gets married to Rivka and brings it into her mother's tent, the lights, correct, right? Because that's the ner that she has. And Nida, it says chadav yoslasar orech kenashim. It talks about when the malachim comes, she goes back to having her period. Right. So again, this is Sarah is the one who set it up. She comes back as a Gilgal as Chana. And Chana, of course, stands for Chala Nida Hadlakas Nerech. When Chala prays, she mentions the fact that she's always been scrupulous with this. So this is Chana, right? This is a very strong statement that she makes, that, you know, this is who she is. And she, unfortunately, as we know, is barren. However, her co-wife, Penina, who we don't like so much.
Well, she's kind of petty.
What? It's one of the great questions I have. Why do people name their children Penina?
Yeah.
Right, there are lots of Peninas out there.
That's a pretty name, but...
I mean, kind of. Okay. Right, it's an odd one.
They never learn Shmuel.
That's right. That's why people have to learn Navi.
They never learn Shmuel Aleph.
Doesn't it also translate as pearl?
Yeah.
That is still...
Sister, right? Very interesting.
I'd like to be named after a gem. Nice.
Okay. All right, Ruby.
So take your love to town.
Okay. Goodbye, Ruby Tuesday. So, v'avah ha'isha hu meiro miyamim yamima lishtachvas lizboach adonai tzvos gishiro. So from time to time, let's see what those words mean. Very odd choice of words. What does miyamim yamima? He would go up from time to time.
It doesn't sound like he's regular.
Well, it does sound, I don't know. He would go up to Shiloh, and when he would go to Shiloh, right, there he would bring karbanos, etc.
Right.
There is a, if you look at the Radak at number 12, I'm going to try to make it as much. Right. It says Mishana Lashana, from year to year. Maybe it means from he used to come on every holiday. Now, why would he go on every holiday?
That's when we go up to make sacrifices.
What? Well, he's going to bring karbanos. That sounds more like. So it sounds from here. So it's interesting because it sounds from here that this would be that they would go. They make aliyah regel. You made aliyah regel to Shiloh, to the Mishkan, before there was a Beis Hamikdash.
Well, isn't that what was there? Was in Shiloh? Wasn't that where the
Shiloh was the only option? Okay, but right. Where do we make aliyah regel to now? Because where'd I go? Panama.
No,
nonsense.
No, you're
lying,
but, so you're saying they didn't.
It's on the way.
The world is round, I guess.
More on the way to Denver, yeah.
It's on the way. More on the way from Denver than from Miami, let's say.
Yeah, would people go up to Shiloh 3 times a year?
So it's interesting. I'll just mention it. We won't read it inside, but number 14, that. Is a sefer called Yachal Yisrael. Extra bonus. Who wrote the Yachal Yisrael? Anybody?
Yachal?
Rabbi Lau.
Yeah.
Oh. Rabbi Lau Sr. Rabbi Lau Sr. wrote it, and someone asked the question, was there a Lila Regel to Shiloh?
That's my question.
Right, so that was exactly. So he says this is a primary source for it. That, again, the fact that you have to figure out, are we saying that he used to go to Shiloh from time to time?
Right, that doesn't sound like regular.
Right, or miyam miyam, he used to go on a regular basis, indicating that, in fact, there was an idea of alil regel even before there was a Beis HaMikdash, just once there was a Mishkan.
So are we choosing to read it that he goes every year, three times a
we
year?
We don't have to choose read it one way. There's two different ways of reading it.
I see. Okay.
And then that's. Good. But again, it's an interesting choice of words in terms of the, and it happens to be important. Now it's not important in terms of the fact that it's to sort of say it's historical. Right? We don't have a situation now of having a Mishkan and not a Beis HaMikdash. And we will, in all likelihood, never again have that situation.
Okay.
Right? So therefore, in a practical question, it isn't.
Right? Okay.
But it's a historic question.
I see.
To understand.
But also, does it mean that he went once a year?
So again, there are different opinions. I'm trying to skip a little bit because Shlomo was so scared with the 53. But if you look at the Medrash number 13, for example, it says, "Vahi eish achad min aramatayim, hayi alkna ola arba pa'amim bashana." You go four times a year. And they were? Shalosh min ha-Torah v'acha shiki be'olav. Three of them he was obligated by the Torah, and that would be... And one on his own.
And what would that be?
St. Patrick's Day. Whatever. cheap tickets.
Exactly. Whatever he had to sail a kayak.
His anniversary. I don't know.
Whatever Dan's deal is posted to sail, that's when he went.
I go, when did you go for Aggie's birthday? So I think you should do okay. So
he has a fourth.
Right. But that's individual. But the idea being that there were specific times where he would go. That's that opinion. Okay. So here they were. So they used to go on a regular basis. And he hayom vayizbach elkana v'nasan l'pnina ishto choban elban v'nasan manos. So Pnina had many children, and everybody got a serving from the, this was a carbon shlamim, it sounds like, a carbon shlamim. Part of it gets burned on the bizbeach, part of it is given to the Kohen, and part of it the person who brought the carbon could eat, right? So therefore, he gave out to Pnina, and... everybody got one serving. L'chano, yitein mona achas apayim ki eschano aheva anaisa garachma. He gave her extra. He gave her an extra serving because to show that he really loved her, even though she unfortunately did not have children.
My translation, is it weird? It says, but to Chana he would give one choice portion for L'chano.
Mm-hmm.
I mean the choice portion.
The best.
Okay.
Not like as in
one, but right.
Got it.
So Vikiasat Sarasa Gamkaz Bavor Harima Kisagra Naibad Rahma. And Pnina would sit there and just make her angry.
Needle her.
Right? If you look the it's not really a very nice thing to say at all. So the Rashi comments on this. We have it. I put it on number 17, and it says Bavur Harima. What does that mean? So Rashi explains that she did it. She had good intentions in mind.
The Pnina had good intentions.
Right. What were the good intentions?
To make her
pray more. Right. One's got to be very careful.
I was about to say Hashem's the one who should be causing that, not individuals.
So again, good intentions. It paves the path to
hockey sticks.
Hell. Okay.
I'm grown up, I can say
that. The L's are hockey
right.
sticks.
All right.
I guess you can figure out. Double hockey sticks.
So, the Gemara in Nazir will point out, says, Amar Rav Nosson Bar Yitzchak Gedola Aver Lishma B'Mitzvah Shelo Lishma. It is potentially true that if you do a sin for the right reason, it's better than doing a good deed for the wrong reasons. So again, anyone we can think of who did a sin for the right reason?
Yeah, Esther.
Esther. Yeah, that's a good choice.
Oh, right.
But you got so there's a lot to be said about this. Why Esther?
The question is, does it become a sin at that point?
Name me another one. So.
What? Yael.
Okay.
Yaakov.
Kind of
serious.
Yaakov.
With
lying Yaakov. To his father?
Uh-huh. Yaakov does a lot of that. So.
Yeah. Phoenicia MS. Not so much.
Yeah. He's a real lie.
He does a lot of stuff.
He asks. He just doesn't
That's kind of a broad statement.
He never
yes, he did stuff.
I'm saying he did some shady stuff.
One second, but he never says that.
I don't
want to
be equivocating. I'm saying, from the beginning until he becomes an adult man, he's not so right. He doesn't seem so righteous to me.
I disagree.
Okay.
Okay.
I mean, he tricks his brother out of the birthright.
Why he tricked him?
He doesn't trick him.
He's a girl.
It's a sale.
You guys, come on. And I think his mother was kind of tricky like that. I like her very much. Don't understand me. I like her a lot. But
I'll keep that in mind.
But she does some kind of shady stuff. Is all I'm saying.
Clever
is one way to put it. Shady is another way to put it.
Okay. So. So in fact, the chain asa shana b'shana midei arosav beis Adonai kein tachisena vativkev rosochal. This would happen on a regular basis all the time. Every year she would do this, and she would cry, and she would end up not eating. Vayomer la elkana isha chana lama sivki v'lama rosochi v'lama yira levavech halo anochi tovach me'asa rabbanim. He says, what are you so upset about? You're better to me than 10 sons. Why does he pick 10? What? So again, according to one of the opinions, we'll see later on, this is Rashi number 19, because Penina has 10 sons. Penina has 10 kids, and Chana has none.
So do we come to understand that Elkanan doesn't know that Penina is mocking her and pushing her and needling her and making her sad?
I have no reason to believe that he does.
Okay.
So Vatakam Chana Acharei Acha V'Shiro V'Acharei Shaso V'Eli Yakoin Yoshev Arakise Amuzaz Heichar Adonai. So finally she gets up and she says, that's it. It's time to move on. And she says she's going to pray now. Number 20 is a very interesting piece from Rav Soloveitchik. We'll do it outside. The question is, this never happened. Why suddenly now does she go and say, that's it, I'm going to pray?
What tips this give?
Right, she's been doing this for years. Right? What made this one different? So Rav Soloveitchik is very interesting. He says, when Elkanah finally sits down with her and says, I love you more than 10 sons, what he's actually saying is, Let's give it up. This just wasn't meant to be. You know, you can live a full, fulfilling life without children. And he says, you know, I think it's time. We've been praying together all these years, and
it's not in the cards for us.
Just wasn't meant to be. Well, not in the cards for her. He's got 10 kids.
For us.
Right, yeah. Right. So he says that feeling of being alone, being abandoned by her husband, that's what sets this off. That's
a nice interpretation.
Mm-hmm. So again, that's Rav Soloveitchik's in number 20. It was written over in a Torah journal after he passed on. A very wonderful idea.
I like that.
Right. Then we spoke about it one year on Rosh Hashanah. Mm-hmm. So now that's it. She's going to go and she's going to go and push for it, and there's going to be she's going to finally have it out with God. So Eli HaKohen, this is, by the way, to give you an idea where we are, Eli HaKohen is the last of the Shoftim, and he's going to be the one who hands over the reins to Shmuel. Shmuel is the first of the Nevi'im. And we'll have to discuss at some point what's the difference between a shofet and a navi.
Yes, that'd be helpful.
Right, and then a shofet and a navi and a melech.
Well, a navi has nevuah, which a shofet doesn't have.
No, the shoftim didn't have any nevuah. Devorah didn't have nevuah.
Oh,
yeah.
Then why do they call her
Devorah and Nevi'ah? I think they did. That's one reason. Right.
Does the king have nevuah?
Some they do, some they don't. Right? I think David HaMelech probably had Nevuah. I think other ones, not so much. So, at one point we'll discuss whether Shlomo was a Navi. That's an interesting question.
Okay.
So,
we call him a Melech, though.
It can be more than one.
Right.
Right? It's like the rabbi doctors. You can be a rabbi and a doctor. You can be a rabbi without being a doctor. You can be a doctor without being a rabbi. Yeah. You can be a Rebbetzin doctor. It's fine.
Yeah. So, a rabbi and a doctor.
Yeah. Cool. So,
a rabbi and a woman.
You can't be a woman and a doctor. Stop it. That's ridiculous. Girls can't be doctors. They're girls.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
DNA problem there.
Ridiculous. Crazy talk. So in fact, they are sitting at the. So she's not eating. It says on the one hand, interesting how we'll just take a look here. It says in just so we don't miss over it in Pasuk Zion. It says what? Vatifka v'lo solchal.
Bitter in spirit.
No, Vatifka v'lo solchal. The end of Zion. She cried. And she cried and she did not eat. Okay. What does Tess begin with? Vatakam chana achrei achla.
After she ate.
Wait a second.
Well, maybe after they had the conversation, she ate.
But it says she didn't eat. So it happens to be, so the Matsudas David said she just ate a little bit. She didn't eat that much, right? Now this happens to be, what day is this that this is happening?
Rosh Hashanah.
Rosh Hashanah. Which is why we read this.
We read it on Rosh Hashanah. How do we know it's happening on Rosh Hashanah?
So I skipped over that source. But in fact, we have a tradition, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, number 16. If you want to look back at it.
So you can just tell me.
Rosh Hashanah, that's our Racha Bachana, the knowledge.
Right.
Our Asiya Pekida.
Right. It says that this happened on Rosh Hashanah. That's the relevant
point.
Right.
Basically.
Correct.
I was going to say,
is interesting because that also gives us a little bit of an idea as to what was the fourth time they went to the Shiloh, according to the Medrash.
Which would be?
Rosh Hashanah. They went Sukkot.
Got it. So they're going to Rosh Hashanah. Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. You don't really know.
Now, this happens to be an important question because there is a major discussion, number two, whether you're allowed to fast on Rosh Hashanah.
Well, she had a special thing going on.
So the question, right? So there are two. There were people who used to fast on Rosh Hashanah. There were the Gaonim, right? It's quoted in the Torah that just like when you fast on Yom Kippur, you also fast on Rosh Hashanah.
Why? For atonement?
Yom Hadin.
That and so
Gedalia,
3 days of
fasting. Mm-hmm.
So,
just saying,
a lot. Why? So it's interesting. So the question is, well, it says she would. Then it also says after she ate. So again, it could be acher achla, could just mean after the meal was over. Not that she necessarily ate anything at the meal. In that case, it would indicate that she is fasting. Or you can say, no, like the Mitzvah, after she ate a little something, but she didn't really eat.
Also, why do we think she's fasting?
Pasuk Zion, remember? Verse 7, last words.
She didn't eat.
One second. But over here, they add words that it was in Shiloh and it also that she drank. So maybe she's in a new location at this point.
Look, she's depressed.
Well, no, obviously she's not in a new location because she's walking into the Mishka now.
Right.
And that's not it's definitely not a new location.
Right.
Well, again, I get that she's not eating and drinking so much. She's not a happy lady. She's very depressed, and you don't eat very much. Mm-hmm. So why do we have to make it out as fasting?
Well, she would not eat, it said.
But she wasn't eating because she was crying.
Yes, she's upset.
Okay, but whatever the reason was, she wasn't eating.
Yeah. But it would also counter that, and after she arose after eating, so she ate a little.
Well, that's the question. That's exactly what we pointed out. That in verse 7, it says she didn't eat. Then in verse 9, it says, well, once she finished eating, wait a second. That's where we got into the... This is how we got stuck here.
I'm just saying, we're jumping to a conclusion about fasting. I don't know that she was fasting. I hear she wasn't eating, but I don't know that she was fasting.
So where I come from, not eating and fasting are really, really similar.
I get that. I have been depressed and not eaten.
But you didn't eat at all?
You know, I don't eat. You know, I miss a couple meals, so.
I've been depressed and I've eaten pints of ice cream.
<Doesn't>
That's not about me, you know?
The other thing, too, is generally if I'm not eating, I'm also drinking because I'm drinking.
Okay.
I'm just saying, it seems to me we jump, since we're examining it.
I know people that are depressed who drink a lot.
That's also true.
I'm not the therapist here. I'm just saying.
My point is, however, that it feels like we jumped to the conclusion. Is all I'm saying.
Okay. I don't think it's a radical jump to say not eating and fasting are the same thing.
Okay. I mean, I grew up with that she fasted, and now that I look at the text more closely, and that it says she rose after eating a little, you know.
Okay, well, that's it. We're not pushing any agenda.
Yeah, good
right,
to know.
Right, we're the ones who pointed it out to you that it says after she ate.
Thank you.
So it's which is surprising because you knew this beforehand, didn't
you?
Just saying. So.
Okay.
So. So Eli HaKohen is sitting by the doorway of the Heichal. Now that's a little bit of it. And again, a case we're not going to go into it in depth, but we'll just point out that. He probably won't.
He can go all the way. No, I'm saying he's allowed to go all the way up to the Heichal.
He's allowed to, but he's not allowed to sit there. If you look at number 25, Tosus points out Ein Yeshiva, Shiva the David Yoshev.
Is a temple in Shiva?
What?
Is that actually a temple?
Mm-hmm. Again, it's a Mishkan. It's exactly what it was.
No, I understood a Mishkan, and I
that was
a picture, not a temple kind of a...
It was a tent, it wasn't a building.
I know that.
It was a tent, it wasn't a building.
It was a tent, it wasn't a building.
It traveled.
Okay, I get that.
I mean, it didn't travel much. It was in Shiloh for over 300 years.
Right.
Exactly. It didn't get around a lot.
So they didn't build a permanent building around it. They just put a tent around it.
Great. It was a tent. Correct. Okay. Just like it was. It remained in a tent from the time they were in the desert until they finally built the Beis HaMikdash.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So again, so the idea that he's sitting there is a little bit of a question. So Tosfos, in fact, is bothered by it. So he said it wasn't really sitting. It meant he was praying because he couldn't have actually been sitting. Okay, maybe yes, maybe not. Right, so that's one idea. Let's go back to the story. Yud vehi maras nafesh vatisparo al Adonai uvachosifke. Very interesting choice of words there. It says, and she was maras nefesh, she was very bitter, and she prayed al Hashem. What does that mean, al Hashem?
To Hashem.
To what would you expect that to be?
El.
So what's all?
To rely on Hashem.
She prayed on God.
Right, so I think it's saying she prayed to rely on Hashem. I mean, she it was a recognition that without him.
Generally in Tanakh, right?
We would say El.
So what's the interpretation for El?
So the Gemara Bracha says that she kind of threw her pain on God. She blamed him for it. It sounds like.
Okay, I agree with that.
Right. So she said that he or she was very upset about it, and then she went and sort of unloaded on God. So. Okay. And she cried. The fact that she cried, by the way, is also interesting. There is a machokas between the Gra and the Arizal as to whether a person is supposed to cry on Rosh Hashanah. Yes. Right? In general, like on, because Rosh Hashanah is a strange type of day. It's on the one hand, it's a day of judgment. It's a Yom Kippur type of day. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it's also, it's Yontif. It's like Sukkos. Right? You don't cry on Sukkos. So it seems that Chana is crying, and this is the day. Vatidor neder vatomer Adonai tzvaos.
She
She said, God, if you see my pain and you remember me, right, don't forget me, and you give me Zera Anashim. How does she come to the word Zera Anashim?
You could also read it as, you remember me. Give your mates. In other words, that she's kind of demanding. You could read it as such.
Well, again, there's an im there, isn't there?
There's a what?
Im. There's an if.
Yeah. If you take the office. Yeah.
Right.
I'm just saying she's distraught.
The im is important here because it seems to be that there's a, as we would say in the news, a quid pro quo. Mm. That's as us politicians say it.
It's conditional.
Right. So he said, if you in fact give me, the word Zera Anashim is very strange.
Generations, future generations that are going to come after me.
It's an interesting way to talk about wanting an offspring.
Right. I will give it this child over to God. And it will never shave. Now, very fascinating Gemara here. So going along with the idea that she's coming from a position of anger almost, mm-hmm. right?
So yeah, why is she turning around and basically giving Hashem the ability? It doesn't work with the previous idea. She's mad at God.
No, it does, because the Gemara goes on to explain, says in Ra'o Tiresh, she says, listen, God, I'm going to have children. We can do this two ways. We can do this the easy way, or we can do it the hard way. It's up to you, God.
And I'm willing to take the hard way if you don't come through.
So what is the hard way?
I'll go out and have an affair.
And how's that going to give her children?
Well, she could be threatened. She could make it look like she's having an affair.
And then?
And then my husband will bring me to the court and accuse me of maybe having an affair.
And then what?
And then we'll go through a whole sota experience.
And then what will happen?
I will get through the sota experience, and then you'll have to give me a child, because that's the deal you made with
Correct.
Us.
Correct. Correct. It says, by a sota, it says that in the event, if a man suspects his wife, I was going to write a book on sota. I don't have what to say, but I've got a great title.
Yeah.
I'm going to call it What to Suspect When You're Suspecting.
That's true. She's not going to be upset.
So say it again when.
So what happens is as follows. The way it works is if a man suspects.
Can I explain it?
Oh, okay.
Unless you really want him to explain it. You probably want him to explain it.
Somebody explain it.
All right, I'll let you.
Mighty white of you, thank you. So we learned in Parshas Naso that in the event that a man suspects his wife, there is a ceremony they undergo where they take water from the kior and they put in it some of the dirt from the floor of the Mishkan, and they then put in the name of God and they dissolve it there, and she drinks it. In the event she in fact was unfaithful,
She blows up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very nasty type of thing. But
it's an ugly scene.
In the event that she in fact wasn't, it says v'nikra v'nizra zera. So in the event that she's found to be clean, then she goes back and she has children. And the Gemara explains, if she was barren, she would now have children. If the event she was having difficult pregnancies, she'll now have easy pregnancies. And then it goes on to explain other upgrades that are potentially involved. Okay? So she's saying, listen, I will fake an affair, and you'll go through this. It's very interesting, and so there's a lot of discussion. Wait a second, are you allowed to do that?
She's kind of blackmailing God a little bit,
right? But again,
but are you to fake it?
Forget the faking. What's wrong about the ceremony on its own? You're destroying the name of God.
And she's drinking it. She's taking it into her body.
Right. So the question is, you can't generally do that, right? That's not right. What gives you the right to do that? So, one of my, I think, fascinating tshuvas, number 32 here, is the Netziv. Which we again will want to. He asked the question, what gives her a right to do it? And he makes a very, very fascinating point, which I think is very relevant to this day. And he says as follows. He says, I'll tell you how it's relevant first. That'll make it a little more interesting. So IVF. IVF involves halachic shilas. It's inevitable that something's going to come up, right? The just give a simple case, right? That obviously before the extraction of the eggs, you give the woman hormones to hyper-stimulate her ovaries, and that's a you give her usually a week or two of shots made out of the urine of post-menopausal European women, and that causes this to her to instead of releasing one or two eggs, she's going to release 15, 20 eggs. Now, this shot has to be taken, obviously, on regular intervals for a week or two, which involves a shot on Shabbos. Taking a shot on Shabbos is causing a wound, which is a problem. So the question is, how is that allowed? So the simple answer is, well, Pru Revu is a big mitzvah, and therefore, for the sake of the mitzvah, you have a right to do it. Rabbi J. David Bleich disagrees with that. And he says that there is no mitzvah to undergo artificial reproductive technologies. Everybody has a mitzvah to do their best to, through normal means, to have children. In the event that it doesn't work out, either because a person has fertility issues, because they never meet the Mr. Right, or whatever it is, that's...
But that doesn't make sense either, because you have, you know, medical technology that's advanced, and so, you know,
to allow you to
you
do
take
it.
Advantage of, I mean, that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to.
So the answer is, so his argument is no. Right? Let's think of a crazy case. Let's say a person goes and they get married and they live as husband and wife and they're blessed with children, but they're all one gender.
Imagine that.
I never heard of
it. Hypothetical.
Can you imagine that?
Hypothetical.
Right. I'd imagine.
Yeah. Me too.
So after 120 years, you go up to the pearly gates, and God's going to say, how come you never did Puruvu? You said the answer would be, well, why don't you tell me?
Exactly.
We already got saved through our children.
Yeah.
Right? Right, so obviously it's hard to argue that, you know, you're not yotzei the mitzvah in that case. A person has done their darndest, and you know, they keep on rolling the dice, and it keeps on coming up the same each time. Mm-hmm. Keep on flipping the coin, and it's always heads or it's always tails, whatever it is. Right? So, what do you want for the poor guy?
But they say, you know, if you have your grandchildren of the other sex, you're okay.
I don't know who they are because the Shulchan Aruch doesn't say that, but you're good with them.
We have this one granddaughter. Yeah? Okay. The only one and only.
Yeah. Okay. God bless Ella. So the bottom line is, the idea is that no, when you die, they say asakta b'piriyah v'rivya, right? Did you go and did you try, right? And the answer yes, and that's that. It doesn't say kiyamta, right? Did you do it? So again, Rabbi Bleich explains that a person has an obligation to have children. And when you have a boy and a girl, you know you've done enough. Up until that point, you just keep on trying. But that's all it is. It's not that you're not yotzei.
No, you keep trying, but you don't get an outcome.
Right, so let's say a person has repeatedly boys, repeatedly girls. At some point, you think there's a mitzvah to go to the doctors for gender selection?
No. I don't want that.
Right? We were thinking about going for just like, make sure the next one's not a boy. He looks so funny in all that pink.
But you just sidestep the question. So they're trying, they live as husband and wife, they're trying, mm-hmm. They don't. But well, in today's technology, you can up your possibility of having offspring, not picking the sex.
Well, you can do it, because you can pick it also.
Pardon me?
Right, through PIGD, you can.
I know you can, but I'm not suggesting that.
So why you said why? What's the difference? Why one yes and one no? I'm saying if
one
you're saying yes,
one is offspring, one is no offspring.
Okay, but one is again. If we're considering the mitzvah, one they're both the mitzvah or not the mitzvah.
Why not try to go the full way? Where are they
going to
do it?
What's the difference?
Yeah, why don't you make the person go out and get themselves a girl?
Because that's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah is about offspring.
No, the mitzvah is a boy and a girl.
Well, ideally, but if
it's the mitzvah.
If you're not having anything, why not try and do something?
So I would argue that the person with the five girls should be more obligated to have a boy than the person who's having no children to have a child, because they still won't have one of each. I think the logic is the exact opposite.
So what's the because the man who
has point is a good point
more,
because the other person
the more, the,
is not going to have two.
The man that has five daughters, somebody else is going to have five sons. So I think it all equals out.
No, but the idea
and again, the person instead of having 1% have two children, the other person has two children, 1% have four children, the other person
so
has none.
So what's the answer? Because a lot of religious people do it.
Right. So Rabbi Bleich is of the opinion that in fact not only that you're not allowed to do it.
Okay.
Because you can end up with these questions, right? Whether it's the question of how do you take a shot on Shabbos, or it's a question of what do you do with the spare embryos, right? There are a lot of halachic issues that come up.
Yes, there are.
Right? So he says, don't do it. So the question is... So in Machokas, one hand we have Breich, on the other hand we have Patty.
I'm just saying there are other people who have different.
Breich back to town. The two of them can have a panel.
Mano a mano.
I'm just saying there are other rabbis that have a different opinion.
So what is their what are they thinking? Those said other rabbis, these purported other rabbis.
They had so much time on their hands.
Thank you, Erming.
Just the imperative to have children. It, kind of overtake Shabbos at this
point. Why? Again, there is no halacha.
I understand.
Is.
Because it's...
I believe the answer lies right here in Chana.
Fine.
Right? And then it's if. Right? Because the answer here is, so the Tziv says, what give Chana the right to turn around and say, well, I'm just going to erase your name. Do me something, God. where is that coming from? Because the answer is, the Tziv says that, forget whether it's a mitzvah or not, he says, when Rachel says to Yaakov, give me children, v'mayin mesa anochi, that's not just a flippant use of words.
Exactly.
Right? The pain of infertility is on the level of the psychological pain of a matter of life and death.
Yes.
And therefore, she would have the right to erase Hashem's name in order to overcome, right? Even though, again, the argument is, because here, she really had no mitzvah, because the mitzvah is on the man,
right.
And he was Mekayim, thank you very much, time's over.
Right, many sons.
Right? So therefore, he's up there with Haman, him and his 10 sons. Right? So the argument was that obviously she did not have the halachic argument of the pru revu.
Right. And
but the Netziv says, right, but the psychological need is of halachic import as well.
Okay.
Right? Which is why I think that can well be applied to the cases of infertility. You know, if you're going to let them, that whatever the issue is, even if his argument is right, let's say he's right, right? It's not such a crazy argument.
That's a good argument.
Right? But the answer, I believe, comes from here, the story of Chana. The fact that Chana has the ability to turn around and say, listen, God, your choice.
The easy way or the hard way. Mm-hmm.
Right? But this is happening. Yeah. Note.
One way or another.
Right. So that is the very key point here. The use of the word zera anash.
You said the woman doesn't really have an obligation, but the men's obligation can only be fulfilled by the woman.
That is correct.
So I believe
that to be scientifically true.
So in a way, she does have the obligation.
So that's a good question.
She's a part of it, but she's not. Yeah.
So that's the Ron and Kedushin at the beginning of the second paragraph. Mm-hmm. Right? So it says we mentioned today, by between Mincha Marav, kind of mitzvah bo yosa mi b'shulcho. That's better if you can do a mitzvah yourself, it's better than having an agent do it.
And having what?
An agent.
Proxy. Mm-hmm.
Secret or otherwise. So therefore, it says, the Gemara talks about that it's better to give over a ring to the woman yourself and get married rather than send someone else to do it on your behalf. Very romantic. Don't show up at your own wedding. So the Gemara says, mitzvah bo yosmi b'shrucho. It's better for the man to do it. Mitzvah bo yosmi b'shrucho. It's better for the woman to accept the ring herself rather than to have someone do it on her behalf. So the question is, well, what means mitzvah? What mitzvah does she have in getting married? I understand he needs to have children. This is kind of a prerequisite. But what? Where does it come in? She doesn't have that mitzvah. That's what the Ron asks. So the Ron says, whenever there is a case where party A can't do a mitzvah without the help of party B, then in fact it's a mitzvah, it's somewhat of a mitzvah on party B as well. Party B gets
like
part of it.
They get to share it.
Right, they get some. They get a portion of it. Any other cases we can think of?
I know there must be something glaring at us, but I'm not thinking.
There's a surprisingly long list where it comes up.
I don't know, Eliezer going to find a wife? I don't know. I don't think that's what you're talking about.
No.
You're talking about something more direct.
So let's give an example. Birchas Kohanim.
Right, the Kohanim have to do it for you.
Right, the Kohanim have a mitzvah to bless the people.
Okay.
But do we have a mitzvah to be blessed?
No, but in order to be blessed, we have to be there.
Right. Meaning, so again, they need us in order to do that, or the Kohen in Pidyon HaBein. Yeah. Right, it's a mitzvah of the father to be poda his son, but without the Kohen, this isn't getting done.
Mm-hmm. Give me another one.
This is a very interesting one coming up next week. Is there is a discussion of the man has a mitzvah to sleep in the sukkah. Woman does not have a mitzvah to sleep in the sukkah. So the Rama writes that the minhag of men nowadays is not to sleep in the sukkah because the normal way is a man sleeps with his wife, right? And if he's going to sleep in the sukkah and she's not going to, that's not normal. Now, so therefore, he doesn't have to sleep in. So some people say, well,
Let her go.
If he can't go without her, sweetheart.
Take her out there.
Yeah.
Never take you anywhere.
Yeah. Only if she agrees.
Hotel.
To be part of the
hotel. Oh, man, it would be great if tonight was Sukkot.
Better we should do it tonight.
Eishes chayonim tzah. Okay, I think we're a little bit over time, so I think we're gonna call it soon.
Yeah, but you're here.
It's true. I can go, but I don't put anyone in this situation. I'd rather call it now. So, Zera Anoshim, what does that mean? So, a few interesting answers. The one opinion is that he's going to be as great as two other men. What's that? So it says, Moshe v'Aaron b'Kohanov u'Shmuel b'Korei Shmo. When do we say that?
Friday night,
correct. And, right, so it says that Shmuel was in the level of greatness as Moshe and Aaron. That's one opinion. The second opinion is pretty much the exact opposite. When she said, I want a very average kid. So it says, look at the end of number 33. Lo aruch, v'lo gutz, not tall, not short, lo katan, lo
eating. Who's speaking there?
Chana. So they just want a regular kid. Shouldn't be too fat. Shouldn't be too skinny. Shouldn't be too tall. Shouldn't be too short.
Right?
I just want a regular kid. That's all I want. Right?
Yeah, but that...
Right? Lo chacham v'lo tipesh. Shouldn't be too smart. Shouldn't be too dumb.
I read another commentary that basically she was... Because she had nevuah, that she knew... That
there was a Shmuel out there.
No, that the Mishkan really didn't belong in Shiloh. That she knew it, but that it needed to be moved to Yerushalayim.
Yeah.
And that part of this deal is having this son was so that the Beis HaMikdash would be built and that her son would be a piece of that. And I want to say the Malbim, but I could be wrong about that. Well, there's some commentary that says that's part of her nevuah, that was also part of what she was talking to God about, and why I'll give this son over to you. So we're not talking about your just average son. It's an interesting commentary, but...
That's actually the Gemara, though.
Which is the Gemara?
Not too tall, not too short.
No, I get
just
that.
Just right. The Goldilocks approach to children.
What I'm talking about anywhere in the Gemara?
Again, no, there is, again, as we said, the Gemara itself talks about two opposite ends.
Got it.
One is that, one is I want him to be as great as Moshe and Aaron, and the other one is that I want, don't want him to be too smart.
Right.
So we will continue this. As I said, I can't get the whole parak in 1 hour. It's possible.
Really, it's your favorite parak.
It really is.
Excellent. Can we leave these so that they'll be here next week?
I think that would be an excellent idea.
Well, we're not meeting.
So they'll be here in 2 weeks also, I imagine.
That's good. That's good, too.
I'll be happy to put it in my office.
Okay. So how soon do you have to go to the airport for this? We could chat now if that worked for you.
That would be fine.
You have to go to the airport at 1 a.m.
Really? That's how late you're going?
No, I think it's later. Let me check. Let me see how we're doing on that flight.
I was going to say, do you want me? Because I'm the late person.
Here it is. We have a text. At airport, our plane...